Welcome to Nuance Concentrated Value Semi-Annual Update Call. My name is Sylvia, and I'll be operating for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Paul Gillespie. Paul, you may begin.
Good afternoon, everyone. As Sylvia mentioned, this is Paul Gillespie, Vice President and Client Portfolio Manager at Nuance Investments. I want to thank everyone for joining us today for our Nuance Concentrated Value Semiannual Update Call. In the email invitation to today's call, there was a link to a presentation that we will be referring to during the call. For any reason, if you do not have the presentation, you can email us at client.services@nuanceinvestments.com and we will email it over. Before we begin the discussion, I do want to let you know that this presentation may include statements regarding the intent, belief, or current expectations of our portfolio management team. Actual results may differ materially from such forward-looking statements due to a number of factors, including changes in general economic conditions, market liquidity, market volatility, and other market, financial, or governmental uncertainties. During the call today, we'll be giving an update on the firm and the team. We'll also go through a summary of the investment process and updated performance. We will conclude our prepared remarks with a year-end review of 2016 and an outlook of the portfolio going forward. We will then open up the call for questions. With that, I'll turn the call over to Scott Moore, our President and Chief Investment Officer. Scott?
Thanks, Paul. Good afternoon, and thanks, everyone, for joining us. As Paul said, my name is Scott Moore, and I'm the President and Chief Investment Officer of Nuance Investments. On page two of the presentation book that hopefully you all have, you can see our agenda for today. Again, as Paul mentioned, we are going to provide an update on the firm, an update on our team, provide a summary for everyone for 2016, and of course look forward to what we see on the horizon for 2017. On page three is a short summary of our firm. We established Nuance Investments in 2008 as a classic value boutique investment firm. Today, we manage over $1.5 billion using our classic value approach of identifying leading business franchises trading at a discount to our firm's internally derived view of fair value. We have three products today: our concentrated value strategy, which we are obviously talking about right now, which will close to new clients at $1 billion and is getting very close to that number; our mid-cap value strategy, which will close to new clients at $2 billion, and our Nuance concentrated long-short strategy, which we launched a little over a year ago and itself had a very good 2016. Each of our products, as most, if not everyone on this call knows, are capacity constrained to allow us to focus on future returns on capital for our clients. Reminding everyone here that despite that capacity constrained nature, the idea is not to close the accounts to our existing clients, but rather cease the selling process to make sure that we can take care of our existing clients the way that we're supposed to. On page four, you can see our investment team with over 60 years of cumulative investment experience. It's a nice, stable group with myself, Chad Baumler, and our two senior investment analysts, Adam West and Lori Kirby, having quite cohesive experience utilizing our time-tested process. I would also note the addition of Darren Schreier, who I mentioned on our last call 6 months ago. Darren's a CPA from the University of Texas MBA program. He'll be covering the healthcare space for our team. He's been with us again since last summer, and he's off to an outstanding start. Our goals with our team, as everyone on the call knows, is to keep a stable, cohesive group that can get very in-depth into the process that we've been utilizing now for quite a long time. On page five, you can see a single-page schematic of our investment process. This process has not changed since the inception of Nuance, and you can be assured that it will not. Consistency of process, in my opinion, is so critical to consistent execution and long-term risk-adjusted performance. The overall five-step process, as you see, begins with quantitative analysis to identify potential leading business franchises that our team of analysts will study in depth. The second step is that we study in depth again the competitive positions of each and every company that we own for our clients to ensure they are not market share losing businesses consistently or going through significant competitive transactions which can lead to value traps, which is obviously a, a way for us to lose capital and is a very important step for us to attempt to avoid losing capital investments for our clients. Our goal are to have a portfolio of companies with sound and sustainable competitive positions, which we typically define as number one or number two market share position businesses, without those expectations of market share erosion or competitive transitions. As a relatively simple reminder and example, we have been avoiding coal-related stocks now for a very long time, even the number one market share in the production of coal, and that is due to the consistent lost market share to natural gas, solar, wind, and other renewable sources. We identified that particular transition years ago, and certainly that's been a very good choice for our clients from the time that we identified that until today. The third step of our process is our proprietary financial statement analysis work, which we call normalizing or creating a complete set of mid-cycle financial statements. Our goal is to study historical trends, returns on capital, balance sheet strength, capital allocation habits, talk with the company, talk to its peers, other industry experts, and determine a reasonable estimate of mid-cycle earnings, EBITDA, or cash flow on normal balance sheets when the companies are spending very normal sorts of capital spending. We believe this normalization gives us much better levels of earnings, dividends, and cash flows in which to value a business relative to simple trailing 12 months or Wall Street estimates for the next quarter or year or even 2 years out. In other words, we feel like we have a better denominator, numerator in the dividend yield, but better data points from which to begin our valuation studies. And then finally in the process, we perform a full valuation study using our normalized or mid-cycle financial statements. We study price to earnings using the normal earnings, enterprise value to EBITDA using normal EBITDA, dividend yields using normal levels of dividends that we think are sustainable for the companies that we buy and sell for our clients. We use unlevered free cash flow and other things as well to put together a business case and a valuation case that we think is fair and reasonable, not stretched, not being too conservative, just reasonable. Importantly, we study not just what the business is worth, but we also spend the same amount of time studying the potential downside valuation risk. We do that by analyzing historical recessions, historical one-off periods of negativity for the company to find out where valuation multiples can go during the business's most difficult periods. This focus on not only the fair value but also the downside, I believe and always have believed, is relatively unique to Nuance, and we believe has contributed greatly to our top-tier risk-adjusted returns over the long term. So with that backdrop, how was 2016? And how has our performance been since our inception? I'm turning to page six. First, 2016 was a very good year for us as we were up 19.7% net of fees versus our primary benchmark, the Russell 3000 Value Index, up 18.38%, and the S&P 500 up 11.95%. That marks the seventh year out of eight full years and the eighth year out of 9 years, including our stub year in 2008, that we have outperformed our primary benchmark, and we are certainly pleased with that result. As for the long term versus our benchmark, as we enter into our ninth year here at Nuance, we are pleased with our 17.58% net of fee APR annualized percentage rate versus the Russell 3000 Value Index up 13.4% and the S&P up 14.12%. And then lastly, related to performance, if you'll turn to page seven, it shows our performance versus peers over time. You can see we are third percentile versus the Morningstar Large Cap Value Peer Group, 17th percentile versus the Morningstar Mid Cap Value Peer Group, and 7th percentile versus the Lipper Multicap Value Peer Group. Note that we show you all of those because our concentrated product is all cap, and depending on the nature of the particular person or group that actually is studying our performance, some folks put us against large, some put us against mid, and some put us against a more traditional multi or all cap universe. Our goal is to beat them all with less risk. And on that note, importantly, if you look at the middle data column on page seven, we are among the least risky products in all three peer groups as measured by standard deviation, our internal benchmark for our riskiness versus our peers. If you put those two numbers together, You get a Sharpe ratio, our internal favorite measure of risk-adjusted return, and you can see since our inception back in 2008, we are first percentile versus all peer groups since that inception. So on page 8, what drove our performance versus the Russell 3000 Value Index in 2016? My first note is that many of our highlighted pockets of opportunity from our call just a year ago did indeed work out quite nicely. Banks and finance in particular, with BOK Financial, Commerce Bank Shares, Northern Trust, and a bit of Charles Schwab were all outstanding performers. There were actually a couple of others as well. And that was certainly a contrarian call just a year ago. I would also note our primary utility holding, National Fuel Gas, which was a highlighted stock a year ago, also had a very good year for us. And lastly, I would note our rather eclectic group of industrial holdings, which we had mentioned also 12 months ago, which included a couple of agriculture holdings like John Deere and Lindsay Corporation, as well as some transportation companies like Hub Group, and then a couple of more traditional industrials like an Emerson Electric, all did quite well during 2016 for us and for our clients. There were two negatives to note. First, Franks International, a multi-year holding for the firm, one of our better contributors actually a year ago, suffered from a second year of downturn in energy-related spending. We continue to like Franks quite a bit as they are actually gaining share through this downturn, have a best-in-class balance sheet while they're gaining this share, and obviously we like the risk-reward at these prices for Franks as we continue to wait on natural spending in Frank's primary markets to improve off of trough-like levels. The other big negative for the performance actually was our cash drag. Today, we are at 23 to 24% cash due to the late cycle nature of the market and opportunity set. And our opinion is that being patient at these valuation levels is appropriate. And the market in general is not focused on the risk or the downside part of the investment equation quite as much as they should be today. For almost all of our clients, we, during the initial reviews of our process with you, we've talked about later stages of the economic and valuation cycle and how we have the cash flexibility to go into the 20s, low 20s in cash if we see fit and if we feel like the opportunity set is so narrow that it is appropriate. And today is one of those times. We did ended up going there kind of mid to late last year. And we think that's been an appropriate move thus far and continue to believe so. Our final topic for today's call is our 2017 outlook, and you can turn to page 9 to see our team notes. First, we would emphasize that we are, again, clearly in the latter stages of economic and valuation cycles based on our work and suggest that the opportunity set is clearly narrower as we look towards 2017. That said, we once again are seeing some very interesting pockets of opportunity. The first piece I'd like to talk about is healthcare stocks. Companies like PDCO, Patterson Companies, Smith & Nephew, even in Abbott Laboratories and others, following a year that saw election results cause significant uncertainty regarding the Affordable Care Act. This is an area we are seeing a lot of opportunities, and we're spending a great deal of time on, and so far we really like what we're seeing, the high-quality nature of many of these businesses, the longer-term GDP-plus sort of growth, the outstanding returns on capital, and the very strong balance sheets are creating a nice mix for us to find some pockets of risk-reward opportunity in that space. Secondly, I would note, again, the select energy services stocks like Franks International, as I mentioned before, and Schlumberger continue to be interesting as they are one of the very few spaces, sub-industries in the economy where cyclical under-earnings appears to exist in today's economy. I would also note, thirdly, that multinational consumer staples, a couple of examples are Diageo, one of our largest holdings, and Unilever, a recent addition to the portfolio. Currency concerns, an incredibly strong dollar, and election-related uncertainty related to multinational companies have caused underperformance in a couple of these very clean, very competitively advantaged companies with outstanding balance sheets. Lastly, I would note one-off stocks are always popping up, and we would highlight today a company like Heartland Express, ticker symbol HTLD. Heartland is a dominant mid-length Paul Trucker, based in Iowa, transportation company that does trucking and logistics from their headquarters. The company is basically debt-free and under-earning due to a classic overspend and subsequent glut of supply in trucks due to that overspending on trucks that has happened over the last couple of years. The company today is earning about 70 cents a share. Street estimates are around 80 for next year, but we believe the transitory nature of the supply glut and thus pricing issues that they've had are temporary, and we believe normal earnings are closer to $1.20. We were buying the stock recently for our clients at $17 to $18, or about 14 to 15 times debt-free earnings versus our view of the market of opportunities out there, which are close to 20 to 21 times our normal earnings view. So you can see for a debt-free, very high-quality company with outstanding returns on capital, we think we've got an opportunity in a company like Heartland today. So with those opportunities in mind, what are the risks that we want to talk to you about? The biggest area of risk in our view, and we've been writing about this for the last couple of months, is leverage at non-finance companies continues to creep up. Many industrials, staples, and cyclical companies have boosted their net debt to EBITDA by a half to two full points versus their historical levels. Companies like McDonald's, Kellogg's, Coca-Cola, and frankly many others appear to be manufacturing earnings growth through leverage. In our opinion, that raises the risk level in these companies substantially, and investors will be quite surprised at the lack of downside support that will exist in companies like this during their more difficult periods, whether that's one-off problems or whether that's economically sensitive problems that we could have at any point, given the market and economic cycles that do occur over time. Other areas of risk, we would note financials and banks, the opposite of our discussion a year ago. Following the very significant period of outperformance, the group appears to be fully to overvalued. There's a few small pockets where we've got some modestly undervalued names in that space, but as a group, we see fully to overvalued, and we think that group of companies is discounting significant expansion of returns on capital, largely based on the new political realities and the at least theoretical thought that we could see lessening regulation. We think the market is already discounting quite a bit of that, if not all or more of that, based on the valuations that we see in those spaces. Next, we see a pretty classic extended valuations in technology and consumer cyclicals. Very classic to late cycle periods. Consumer cyclicals in general get overvalued. Technology stocks in general get overvalued on over earnings or extended returns on capital, and the downside risk gets pretty substantial. So we see pretty classic valuation risk in both of those sectors. And I would be remiss if we didn't talk about political issues that have become quite real and certainly has our attention. The ramifications of the new president and all of the change that this will potentially cause could be both good and bad for the companies that we have been following for a lot of years. At this time, there is so much unknown that answering a question in a simple way is, frankly, almost impossible. What will happen to earnings and cash flows if taxes indeed get cut? What will happen if the Affordable Care Act is reversed? What will happen if border taxes are added? We obviously don't know with any specificity what will happen in all of these cases. So I think the question our clients should be asking us and we should be telling you is, what are we doing about these uncertainties? And what we are doing is we are creating what-if scenarios for each of our approved list companies and weighing the range of outcomes so we can act swiftly if change does indeed occur. I would note very specifically that for the vast majority of our companies, the good versus the bad delta in our valuations and downside targets are typically plus or minus 10% of our pre-weighted scenario changes. So while they have an impact, I don't want our clients to believe that there is some potential draconian changes due to what we have seen so far and have been working through for our models for these companies. We would also note that we do not anticipate any change to the competitive positions of our leaders due to the political changes that are being discussed. So the long and short of the political ramifications are they certainly have our attention. We are certainly working very hard and very diligently to create appropriate and reasonable ranges of outcomes based on changes that we see potentially coming, but we don't want to overreact, and we want to make sure that we adjust our valuation parameters based on facts and not rumors, but be prepared very quickly to execute very quickly on behalf of our clients. And we feel like we're doing a great job with that, and we are ready to go for all of these potential changes with the new political regime. With that, that concludes my prepared remarks, and I will open it up to any questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. If you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. And our first question comes from Steve Wine from Stifel.
Hi, Steve.
Hi. Between the concentrated value and the mid-cap value, where do you think the greatest opportunity lies? In the mid-cap?
Steve, I appreciate the question. I think, you know, I've gotten this question a lot over the years. And the way I describe it is I happen to have two children. Both are in college. and I love them both identically. And what I would tell you is that over the long term, I think both of these products will be outstanding. If you study them in depth, which you might imagine that I have, what you'll find is they actually have relatively similar return profiles. Both are first percentile risk-adjusted returns versus their peers. And I've always felt like the decision about which one to choose was more philosophical. Do you want a more diverse set of companies, which our mid-cap value product would be, and are you style box focused as our mid-cap value product would be? Do you want to give me a little more cash latitude? That would be concentrated. So I think both products over the long term will provide our clients with an outstanding experience, of course, and I think it's really about what you need for your clients more than me telling you, hey, over the next 12 to 18 months, I think one will win or one will lose. I actually think they'll both do pretty similarly versus their peers, all things being equal. But it's really a bigger picture question, in my opinion. Sorry but that's a pretty tough decision for me.
Gotcha. What would you define as mid-cap? What would be range of capitalization?
Yeah, so we have very specific definitions for what mid-cap is. They're not exactly tight. There's some in the world who says 2 to 12, 2 to 15 billion is the number. We define it as the largest and smallest members of the Russell Mid-Cap Index. Today, that, interestingly enough, is a small size of 583 million in market cap, all the way up to about 38 billion in market cap. So quite a wide range, actually, that's in that Russell Mid-Cap Index. And to be honest with you, my goal is to beat it. So I don't want my definition to be tighter than theirs, if that makes sense to you. So yeah. I want to make sure we can win, so I don't want my opportunity set to be less than that. What we tell you guys is always, and this product has been that way since inception, we want at least 80% of the portfolio inside that band of the largest and smallest members of that benchmark. We also happen to watch, you know, the Morningstar size scores quite a bit. We reverse engineered those. We want to make sure that we're always, you know, inside that Morningstar size score when we do, you know, kind of that math as well. So there's a couple of things we look at. Our weighted average cap today in that product is about 12 to 13 billion. We've been as low as 7, 8, 9, somewhere in that range. And maybe we're a little higher end right now, if that helps you. But the idea is not to focus quite so much on cap. It's really to focus on leading business franchises under-earning their potential due to transitory reasons and buying them for you when there's less downside risk than the market and more upside potential than that of the market.
Thank you very much.
Once Once again, if you have a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. And the next question comes from John Howell from U.S. Capital Advisors.
Hi, John.
Hey, yeah, Scott, just a quick question. I've noticed that from quarter to quarter, you continue to drop your net exposure. And if you could just kind of speak to that a little bit.
So John, I just make sure that I'm so we're talking about the right thing. Are you talking about our cash position in concentrated value?
No, I was talking about concentrated value long short.
Ah, yeah. So our concentrated value long short, obviously happy to talk about it briefly. There will be a call on that product specifically here in about 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
Where my partner, Chad Baum, will go into as much detail as you would like. But I'm happy to give you just a quick summary today on that side. What we're seeing basically is we are kind of in the, you know, seventh to eighth year of an economic expansion. We've got valuation parameters, frankly, that are budding historical highs for our group of leaders. And thus, the long side opportunity set is, as I mentioned in the call, pretty tight. The offset to that is actually the short opportunity set is growing. So as we've outperformed significantly our product up, you know, basically 20% this year, late cycle, that does take away some of that upside. But at the same time, it's giving us some opportunities in some short positions. So we've gone from pretty net long post the 10 to 15% market correction, which a lot of folks forget happened actually earlier this year, to today, actually quite a big move off those market lows in January and February a year ago. We're now actually starting to see some risk rewards on the short side that are as good or better than that in the long side opportunity set. So we're actually about plus 10 to plus 20 net long in that product. And I'll stop there for the good of everybody else who's just focused on concentrated value.
Okay. I hope you're short Under Armour.
No comment.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Angelo Manzo from Meter.
Hi, Scott. I was curious on, and you might have touched on this, the current cash position and then how that ranged throughout the year.
The cash position today is really as high as we've ever had it. Today, it's 23 to 24%. I did discuss that a little bit in the call if you came on a little late. It has grown significantly through the year, basically. So we were, I think, mid-single digits earlier in the year after that market fall off kind of January and February. And then as the year progressed, we're up 20%. The market itself obviously is making, you know, another significant move after obviously a lot of years now in this bull market. And as the opportunity set really started shrinking, we decided the most prudent thing to do would be to be a little bit patient. So grew the cash quite a bit in the latter part of the year. Very pleased that while it certainly did drag on our performance to the tune of almost 300 basis points, interestingly enough, throughout the course of the year, you know, we were still able to outperform our primary benchmark and the S&P 500, so feel really good about that. But in today's market, we feel like we need to be a little patient and wait for better risk rewards. On average for the year, I don't have the number right in front of me. Paul can actually send that to you afterwards, but if I was guessing, I would say 13, 14, 15% for the totality of the year would have been the average. And by the way, one thing to think about as a group, cash in general, when we are having a full set of opportunities, you know, we think of normal as kind of closer to that 2 to 7, 2 to 8 range. So clearly, we are now more cash heavy, and that's because of the, you know, again, what I've mentioned here a couple of times on the call, the tighter range of market opportunities that we have, you know, due to the stretched valuations that we're seeing today. Time to be a little patient from our perspective and focus a little more on protection of your capital than we had the last, you know, 6, 7, 8 years.
We have no further questions at this time.
Thanks, Sylvia. I want to thank everyone for joining us today. As a reminder, for the most up-to-date information on our products, you can visit our website at nuanceinvestments.com. And thank you again for taking the time to dial in today.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.